Okay, so good afternoon. I'm glad to have the opportunity to speak here. So my talk will be, well, first of all, I'm Eric Bertin, so I'm from France, the University of Grenoble. I'm working at CNRS, which is a national research institution in France. And my talk will be about a kinetic theory approach to derive hydrodynamic equations for dry active matter. So as you will see, for those who were at the conference 2 weeks ago, there will be a significant overlap with the talk given by Hugues there. But I will focus on the analytical aspects. So, well, over the years, this work had been done in a collaboration with many different people. So, first of all, there was a whole group in Paris. So, Hugues Chatet, Guillaume Grégoire, Sandrine Gault, Anton Pechkov, who did their PhD with Hugues, and Sébastien Léonard, who was a postdoc a few years ago. Francesco Ginelli, now in Aberdeen, Michel Drault, who participated in the first phases of first steps of this work. He was professor in Geneva, Igor Aronson in Oregon, and Sriram Ramaswamy in Hyderabad. Okay, so probably I don't have to motivate too much that we want to study active matter in this audience. Of course, we all know that in animal groups, in nature, there are many examples of collective motions, like flocks of birds or herds of mammals. I didn't put pictures, we've already seen many of them. There are also experiments on a small scale, I mean, small scale with respect to these ones, small scale biological system, for instance, driven filaments in the group of Andreas Bausch, or microtubule experiments by Sumino et co-workers. There are also examples of physical systems like shaken grains. I'm showing here two examples, one by Coudrolli and co-workers, the other one by Deseigne and Dauchaud. There are also well-known examples of Janus particles, so spherical particles with two-sided coated with different metals. And so they have different chemical reactions with the solvent, which leads to propulsion. This has been done among other groups by Palachi and Bocquet. There are also self-propelled droplets. We have seen the talk by Sachi Tutupalli at the conference. So many, many examples nowadays of experiments. I could also mention, of course, I forgot, the very nice works by Bartolo and co-workers, who have also heard about at the conference. So, well, now the question is how to describe this ordering transition. So, of course, one of the first things you would like to do to describe such a transition could be to just write down a numerical model, put it in the computer, and do numerical simulation. This is a very natural approach. And this has been pioneered by Tamás Vidcek in 1995. It has been extended, studied in more details by Hugues Chatet and Guillaume Grégoire during his PhD. So this was in 2002, and then many people have taken over, and now it has become a huge field, and I'm not sure I'm even able to list all the people in the audience who have done numerical studies of this. So if your name is not on the list, I apologize. But, well, many, many people have worked on these numerical approaches. So another approach, which has also been pioneered at the same time as the Vidcek model, just afterwards, was to look for continuous descriptions based on symmetry considerations. So it's kind of generalization of the Navier-Stokes approach, but with more terms in the equation because there are less symmetries in the problem. And so the first proposal in this direction was done by John Turner and Yuhai Tu in 1995. There will also be a lot of work in this direction by Sriram Ramaswamy, and also in the context of active gels, many works by the Joanie and Pro group. And also, Christina had done things in this direction, I think, and probably other people I didn't mention. So, well, this is a second way to tackle the problem. And the last way I would like to mention, and this is what I will focus on in the rest of the talk, is kind of coarse graining approach. So, you start from a microscopic model, simple enough, and you try to coarse grain it to derive some continuous equation to study the large-scale behavior. So, well, I will present the work of our group. on this topic. Of course, there have been many related works. I try to mention them here. So one of the first work was done by Hansen and Trim at Simring in 2005. This was without self-propulsion, and then with self-propulsion, there are many, many other works that have been done in this direction. So, well, just let me mention, as Christian did yesterday, that so my first paper was in 2006, and so at that time it was also an earlier contribution. Okay, so the system I want to consider today are microscopic models of dry active matter. So by dry, I mean that the particles are essentially moving on the substrate, which acts as a momentum sink, and there is no surrounding fluid that plays a significant role. In experiments, there might be a fluid, but it plays no role. For instance, you can neglect the hydrodynamic interactions between the particles. There is a common feature in all this system is that there is a coupling between the orientation of the particle and its elementary displacement. And this is what makes this kind of system so special. And you can, of course, play with the symmetries either of the particles and of the interaction. So particles can have a polarity, or they can be nematic. They can go back and forth. Or if they are polar, they go always in the same direction, basically. And the interaction can be either ferromagnetic, which means that they tend to align their polarity, or they can be nematic, which means that they tend to align their directions, but a given angle theta and the angle theta plus pi are just strictly equivalent. So the main result of this work is, first of all, to derive some continuous equation in the case of polar and nematic, well, four polar and nematic order parameters, depending on which ones are the relevant order parameters for the symmetries of the system. And in a second step, to study the behavior of this equation and look for instabilities, the onset of order, the appearance of nonlinear patterns, their stability, and so on. So understand the full picture of the stability of this kind of system. Okay, so the outline of the talk is the following. I will spend about half the talk discussing the methods we use on the polar self-propelled particle case with a ferromagnetic alignment. So this was the case of the original Wittek model. And then I will discuss a little bit more briefly two other cases. So the case of polar self-propelled particles with nematic velocity alignment, and the case of purely nematic particles still active. So let me start with the case of polar self-propelled particles. So the model we consider is the following. We consider a two-dimensional model, so we are on a 2D plane. Particles are purely point-like, and they have a velocity v with a fixed magnitude v0. So this is how we model the self-propulsion. We don't include explicitly a force and a damping, but we just say that the velocity, the speed of the particle is fixed. Right, so the only dynamical parameter, dynamical variable, is the angle theta of the velocity of the particle. So by the way, we identify the polarity of the particle with its velocity. We consider stochastic dynamics. So there is first diffusion, an angular diffusion that we model by a jump process, meaning that with a probability lambda per unit time, we change the angle from theta to theta prime by some random amount eta. This is just a way to model angular diffusion again.
Is this a continuous time model?
Well, at this stage, yes. So it's a continuous time. It's a Poisson process, exactly, yeah. And the most interesting part is, of course, the interactions. So imagine that, first of all, we focus on binary interaction in this model that we want to be analytically solvable. So meaning that implicitly we are in the dilute limit. And so we imagine that two particles, one and two, will collide here. They will become closer than a given interaction radius. And so given these two angles, theta one and theta two, we define the average angle theta bar And we say that after the interaction, after the collision, the particle will leave with two angles, theta prime 1 and theta prime 2, which are simply theta bar plus random noise. Let me emphasize that there is there is not at all a momentum conservation, so these angles are not supposed to be symmetric with respect to the average angle. Both eta 1 and eta 2 can be positive and negative. Okay, so this is just to make the rule more precise. Yes?
Is the reason that you're doing this instead of the BSEC model that in the BSEC model there are multi-particle interactions and that complicates the analytic approach?
Yeah, sure. So you want to have only binary interactions. Yeah. Okay, so this was just to make the rule more precise. So again, for self-diffusion, theta prime is theta plus some eta. And for binary collision, as I said, theta prime 1 is eta bar, theta bar plus theta 1, and the same for theta prime 2. So yeah, what I just wanted to add is that the noise eta is drawn from a Gaussian distribution with some variance sigma squared, but we could take another distributions too.
Sorry, I have one question. What is the difference between
A and B?
I mean, where is
you mean A and B?
Yeah, in which sense is B really a collision when you just give some noise to the two? The noise is relative to the average angle.
Yeah, exactly. So you need to have two particles to have this average angle, right? Otherwise, it's just a change. As you take the old direction and just...
I think the obvious thing about the noise zero case, right? So they're just moving randomly in that way.
Right, so the principle of the description is that we want to use a kinetic theory, so Boltzmann equation, basically. And so we write down an evolution equation for the one particle phase space distribution that I call f of r, theta, and t, which is basically the probability to find a given, well, to find a particle, any particle, at time t, at position r, with a velocity angle theta. So to write down the Boltzmann equation, we use an approximation scheme, which is to factorize a two-particle distribution to describe the collisions. So we factorize a two-particle distribution as a product of one particle distribution. This is standard
molecular chaos assumption,
whose validity can be discussed, but this is the approximation we use. And we end up with this Boltzmann equation. So this is a local time derivative. We have an advection term here, meaning simply that particles follow their velocity. And this is an integral term, taking into account the angular diffusion of isolated particle. And this is a bilinear collision term describing the binary interactions between particles. Right, okay, these are simply the expressions of these terms. I don't want to insist on them. You can come back to them if you have questions. And so what we want to do now is to introduce some hydrodynamic fields to derive some continuous equation for these hydrodynamic fields from the Boltzmann equation. So what field do we need to define? We need, first of all, to define the density field, because the number of particle, total number of particles is conserved by the dynamics. So the density is a relevant field for our model. And the velocity field, or the polarity, is also important because it can describe symmetry breaking. So we define this rho because it is a conserved, it is associated to a conserved quantity, and we define this velocity field u because it is associated to a symmetry breaking. And so it is obtained simply by integrating this one particle distribution f multiplied by the velocity of angle theta, basically. So from the Boltzmann equation, it is straightforward to derive the continuity equation, which is the usual one, nothing special to do, it's just conservation of mass. There is no diffusion term here, it's purely advection. And of course, the more difficult part is to derive the equation for the velocity field, so a kind of generalized Navier-Stokes equation. So in principle, you should simply multiply the Boltzmann equation by this vector e of theta and integrate over theta. The problem is that when doing this, you don't find immediately a closed equation in terms of the field you would like to keep, which are density and velocity, and so you need an additional approximation scheme. So the way we do it is to expand this one particle distribution function in angular Fourier modes. So in this way, so we expand f over the angular Fourier modes, and we end up with some modes fk, well, an infinite hierarchy of modes fk, which depends on r and t. And basically, the idea is to keep only the lowest order mode. So first of all, you can start by transforming, expanding in Fourier mode the Boltzmann equation without any approximation. So the advection term yields this term. We have defined a complex derivative, which is simply dx plus I dy. I is the imaginary unit. You have a linear term here coming from the angular diffusion term. And this is so an infinite sum resulting from the collision integral. So you see that you have, even though you would like to keep only the lowest order modes, you see that the equation for the lowest order modes are coupled to all of the modes through this term. So you need to define an approximation scheme again to get a closure, a truncation and a closure. And what we use is a scaling ansatz close to the instability threshold. So you need to identify an instability threshold. To do this, you consider the linearized equation for the modes, for the mode F1, which will be associated to the polarity. So F1 in complex notation directly maps onto the velocity vector u. And so from this linearized equation, you can identify an instability threshold, linear instability threshold. And close to threshold, where you have an ordered homogeneous solution, you can make a scaling ansatz, saying that basically the mode fk is proportional to some small parameter epsilon to the power absolute value of k for non-zero k. And also you have a similar assumption on the density field. So you assume that density varies only slightly with respect to the average density.
So this approach is basically equivalent to if you're doing equilibrium statistical mechanics doing mean field theory of
identity.
Same.
Yeah, so it's in the sense that you do a kind of Ginzburg-Landau expansion. We call it the Boltzmann-Ginzburg-Landau expansion. So yeah, but it's non-equilibrium. You have this advection
term. Right. Oh, yeah. No.
But
I'm not saying it's not new. What I'm saying is it's unfortunately going to be fraught with the same problems that simple Landau theory is fraught with. If you're trying to study equilibrium phase transition, we know it doesn't actually get the right transition temperature. It doesn't actually get the critical exponents. And you're stuck with that here. There's nothing.
Yeah. Exactly. No. Of course.
It's just something to be aware of at least.
Absolutely. And in the end, we'll end up with hydrodynamic equations, which are deterministic. And so the next step could be to derive the hydrodynamic equation with noise terms properly derived. And, I mean, not white, just white noise, but the proper colored noise and so on. And from this, you could hope to get the full, perhaps, quantitative description, but this is not clear at the moment. But yeah, this step is the deterministic equation,
I mean,
so it's kind of mean field.
Yeah. It's just that you'll clearly not get exactly the right instability.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well,
I mean, also, if you're worried about precise parameters,
because it's all low density, so you will never get
a mixed
right.
Right.
But this is,
along the lines of deriving hydrodynamic equations for a fluid, if you underwrite. Yeah. I just wanted to make, I mean, the thing that always puzzled me when I first saw this stuff was, I thought, good God, these people can exactly solve this incredibly complicated many-body problem. Of course, you can. You make approximations, and certain piece of information you just inevitably lose.
That's why it's analogy, which is ignore the filtration you have so much in love with.
Exactly.
It's okay the first step.
No, sure, absolutely. I'm not criticizing you, I'm just saying one needs to be aware that, you know, if you get an instability threshold here and somebody goes out and does a simulation and they find a different instability threshold, it's not a mystery.
No, of course. So we don't aim at quite a quantitative result, yeah. So, in the end, so we keep only the two first modes, and we use the equation for the second mode, F2, or the closure, and we re-express. So we have a closed equation for rho and F1 in the end, and we can re-express this equation for F1 into an equation for the velocity field u, or equivalently for the momentum field W, which is simply rho times U. So just simplify the notation to write it in terms of W. So just to comment a bit on this equation, it looks like more or less like the Navier-Stokes equation. You have here an advection term, which is different from the one you have in Navier-Stokes because the coefficient in front is not what would be 1 over rho, meaning you would have U grad times W. This comes from the absence of Galilean invariance in the problem because you have fixed a given preferred referential. And so gamma, well, I will list all the parameters, but we have all these sums for parameter. We have them, we have the explicit expression for them. So here you have a gradient term, which is more or less like in equilibrium, but still you have this W square contribution to the effective pressure. You have a viscosity term here, which is more or less as in standard fluids, but most important terms, of course, is this one, which is purely local, and which, depending on the side of mu, leads to an instability of the disordered state, W equals zero, and you have here a cubic saturating term. I will come back to this. Yes?
I mean, somehow you sort your system to the powers epsilon to k. And I'm wondering, I mean, you have in this lower equation, you have terms of W to the power of 3. So wouldn't you need then also higher orders F2, F3 in your equations?
So what we did is to... Yeah, so we make this scaling and that, we can discuss where it comes from, etc. But assuming that this is valid, then we expand all the equations in this here, all this hierarchy of equation to order epsilon 3. And we keep only terms for epsilon 3, meaning that you keep only equations for rho, F1, and F2. The equation for F2 allows you to enslave F2 to F1, and you can... F2 is a fast variable with respect to F1. So you can re-eject the expression for F2 in the equation for F1, and you get a close equation with terms up to cubic order.
Thank you. Eric, it seems like there's been some kind of choice of units here such that the compressibility winds up being exactly 1/2.
Oh, yeah. This one is V0. It's V0. Yeah, so that's the velocity of individual particles. Yeah.
And rho is the particle
number
density.
I'm sorry. So actually, well, if you can, okay. In terms of this W, okay. In terms of this W, it should be V0 square.
So you can scale out.
Yeah.
And the compressibility here does not have any interactions. It just comes from the free stream equation.
Yeah, exactly.
If I do, yes.
Okay, so we have the expression of all the transport coefficients that appeared in the previous equation. They depend only on the intensity of the noise, sigma squared. There's this sigma naught squared, which is actually the if you differentiate between the noise in the interaction and the noise in the self-diffusion. Usually we take them equal. And the most important thing is to realize that this coefficient mu is linear in rho, and so and there's here a negative term, here a positive term. So mu can be positive or negative depending on the density of rho.
Yes. But if we were doing a system that had Galilean invariance, lambda, is lambda the coefficient of
right,
the
yeah.
vector term?
No, gamma.
So gamma would be...
1 over rho. It would be 1 over rho, yeah.
Is there some limit in which your results reduce to that?
Well, not for so...
Maybe there's no reason to expect that because there's nothing...
So you can look at... Yeah, it has somehow a complicated expression here, but... it involves this mu, and so if you take lambda to zero, you have something which is proportional to 1 over rho, I think, but that's not exactly 1 over rho. There is a prefactor. It's proportional to 1 over rho, but there is a numerical prefactor which is not 1.
But I think it might also be interesting to point out that Liggins equation this gamma is really the only non-equilibrium term. The right-hand side, you could get it from the free energy of a epicrystal with polar order, all of those terms. So the gamma is really the one term.
But I was just trying to see. It would be useful for me to convert that to know what gamma times rho is, right? Because that's sort of a measure of how far from having Galilean invariants on the left hand side you are. And
right, so we have the expression that you can, of course, you can have a look at it. Okay, so turning to the stability analysis, we start from the homogeneous solution. This is easy. You just have this dTw equals this equal to this simple expression here. So when mu is negative, w equals zero is stable. There is no order. When it becomes positive at high density or low noise, w equals zero is unstable. And so at a high density above this transition value, you get a finite value of W, which I call W0. It's simply square root of mu divided by xi, so these two coefficients. So you get a homogeneous solution, and what you would like to do is to see if this solution is stable with respect to with respect to inhomogeneous perturbation. So at this stage, I just want to sketch the shape of this transition line, which separates the region where the disordered state u equals zero is stable and the region where the homogeneous order state exists and is stable with respect to homogeneous perturbation. But we'll look more carefully at its stability later on the next slide. So here, I just would like to compare with what you find for the transition line in the Wittek model. So you have to be very careful here because I'm not necessarily saying that this transition line in the hydrodynamic equation I found and the transition line in the Wittek model have the same meaning, but at least you can see that quantitatively they have the same shape and they compare rather well. So you more or less capture the right physics, but we will go into details later on. Yes?
Is the shape of the phase boundary a parabola or is it in row?
Yeah, so it's a parabola. Yeah, if you revert it, it's a parabola, meaning that here it's a square root. So later on, it will be represented as a function of sigma square, which means that you have a straight line here.
How do you define the transition line for the Wittek model? Is it the appearance of bands?
Yeah, you define it from the. You look at the order parameter, the Binder cumulant, and so on. So you look at, from the order parameter.
That's the place where you first get the
sigma t.
Oh, sigma t means simply transition line. So it's transition line in the sense. Sigma is the amplitude of the noise, the standard deviation of the noise you put in the microscopic rules. I'm sorry?
You had several types of noises.
Exactly. So this is when you take both amplitudes of noise equal. So same amplitude of noise for collision and angular diffusion.
So you could actually give us a three-dimensional
phase diagram. Sure. You can do it. You can do it. That's true.
Visuals.
Right. So to go beyond this, you have to analyze the stability of this homogeneous ordered state with respect to non-homogeneous perturbation. So we introduce perturbation, delta rho, delta w. You want us to be the linear stability with respect to this perturbation. You introduce a finite wave vector q and study what happens in the low q limit, meaning in the long wavelength limit. And what you find analytically is that, considering only in this case longitudinal perturbation, so it's you consider perturbations are in the same direction as the order, you find that the growth rate as a real part which becomes positive at a low enough q. So it starts as a q square with a positive coefficient. So the conclusion is that a homogeneous ordered state is unstable with respect to long wavelength perturbation close to the transition line. And this is something important. So, just showed you the analytical perturbative results. Now you can do more. And this work was done by Anton Peshkov. And you can analyze numerically the whole stability diagram of the homogeneous states in the model. So here, this is sigma squared, the amplitude of the noise. Here, this is average density rho. And okay, there is a lot of information on this diagram, but what you have to know is that the white parts, the white areas in the diagram, corresponds to stable homogeneous solution. So here, the homogeneous disordered state is stable. Here, the homogeneous ordered state is stable. In this area, between these two lines, so in the colored area, the homogeneous ordered state exists but is unstable with respect to this long wavelength perturbation. This is a result of the calculation I just showed you, but you can numerically you can see that there is also a limit here, that far away from the transition line it becomes again stable. And there is a secondary instability there where the most unstable perturbations are mostly in the perpendicular direction. So here you had essentially longitudinal perturbation, which were dangerous. Here the transverse perturbation, perpendicular to order, are dangerous. And so the color codes for the angle of the most unstable perturbation. But okay, what you have to understand is that white regions correspond again to stable homogeneous state, here without order, here ordered, and here, so again, unstable homogeneous state, and here unstable homogeneous state. So we believe, so it is the next thing to say, we believe that this area here, which is unstable, is actually an artifact of the truncation scheme. So here we are far away from the transition line. Remember that we have used an expansion close to the transition line. And so what happens here is not really controlled. And when we do stability analysis numerically on the Boltzmann equation, at least in the long wavelength limit, we find no such transition line. So we believe that this is an artifact of the truncation. And in the following, I will focus more on this part. Yes?
The picture we're looking at, the stability diagram we're looking at,
is the result of
simulations.
No, well, it's numerical analysis of the hydrodynamic equation.
All the 3x3 matrix. So
exactly.
Oh, so this, but
yeah, just diagonalization problem.
Is this diagram simulations or is this analysis on Mach?
It's numerical analysis of an analytical problem, if you wish. So solving,
Mathematical work. I want to know whether this is a simulation of a subatomic
particle model. No, not at all. No, analytical. Okay. Yes. No, so it's just that here it starts linearly, but that's what I mean. Yeah. So it's not a pure parabola, but it starts as a parabola.
I miss what is the color, what's the angle, what do you mean by the...
Yeah, so this is the angle, so the most unstable, you look at the direction, well, the most unstable direction, most unstable wave vector, if you wish. And so this codes for the angle, so zero means that it is longitudinal, it is the most unstable wave vector is along the order.
I see.
And here it's pi over 2, it's perpendicular to the order.
Notice that the second region is not quite transversal. It's not a dark blue.
It's almost.
Yeah,
almost.
Along the order means for a certain kind of band structure like that?
No, here we are looking at the linear instability of homogeneous state. So simply you have homogeneous order state, this defines the polar direction of order, and it is longitudinal where the wave vector is simply along the direction of order. That's simply what we mean. So you remember we had you have to define a wave vector here, right? This Q. And when this wave vector is along the direction of order of the homogeneous state, you say it is longitudinal, right?
Yeah. So it's unstable in this direction means
inhomogeneous structure
for the perpendicular
to this direction. Right. All these instabilities correspond to the inhomogeneous structures. Yeah. Just some of them, the inhomogeneity has its wave vector along the velocity. Yeah. Some have, so in some of them, it looks like you're trying to form bands that are moving this way. And some of them looks like they're trying to form bands and moving this way. That's the pi over 2. And some of them, it's sort of mixed.
But so yeah, here's a kind of compression instability. So this is just at the linear level. But if you go to the nonlinear level, you will find the bends. Yeah, so this is precisely what I'm going to say. So if you look at least at what happens at in one dimension, in this unstable region close to the transition line, you find nonlinear patterns that appear. Initially, they are quite irregular. You have small ones, big ones. And if you wait long enough, you find a more or less regular pattern, more or less periodic, with solitary waves. So they are moving here. They are moving
in this direction,
to the left. You can see this from the asymmetry of the band. The steep part is in front. Right. So here I wanted to discuss briefly the existence region of this band. And so I will put it in perspective with respect to what I showed before, the linear stability diagram. So here what I show is for a given density, what happens as a function of noise. So here the amplitude of noise, sigma. Here it's the average velocity, so it's all the parameter. At high noise, you have a disordered state. At low noise, so below this threshold value, you have, in principle, a homogeneous state. At least the homogeneous ordered state exists. This is the instability threshold of the disordered state, linear instability threshold. And so from the linear analysis, linear stability analysis, what did we get? So here, homogeneous disordered state is stable. Here, the homogeneous ordered state is unstable, and here the homogeneous ordered state is stable again. And I did not represent here the second instability. So okay, so just I'm just looking at what happens at a fixed density. So I'm considering what happens along this line, and I forget about this secondary instability. So this gives you these two thresholds here. And now we're interested in what happens for the existence of this band solution I was just showing before. And you see that you obtain them, of course, when the homogeneous flow is unstable. But most importantly, you also obtain them beyond this region, so here and here. So it means that when you go here below this threshold, well, the homogeneous state is stable again. You can also observe this state with bands, so these inhomogeneous states. And here also, where the disordered state is stable, you can also observe bands. So this is important because it has consequences for the order of the transition. Here we are looking at a purely deterministic problem without noise, but oops. Yes, so these lines come from the linear analysis, but these points here, yeah, come from a numerical integration of the ODE. I'm sorry. Oh yeah, no, I meant 1 dpd.
It should be here. It's just an artifact of the truncation, right?
Yes.
What does it lead to? What type of phase is there?
Yeah, it just blows up. So, yeah, there's no real pattern appearing, I think. But, yeah.
Does that mean you get some chaotic state?
Right, okay, it blows up. And so what I wanted to say is that
which shows that, the equation is going to be basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's no saturation.
Yeah. That's not present also.
Is it like formation shocks or something?
No, it's different. It's a very
a short wavelength.
I think you have a short wavelength, very fast growth, at the linear level, then there's no saturation, which is it's broken.
Yeah, probably you get the localization problems with discretization and so on.
Right. So to come back to this diagram, so
the important thing is that here you have coexistence of the disordered homogeneous solution and these ordered bends. Coexistence meaning that at the same value of the parameters, we could have either one or the other solution. And so if you include a little bit of noise in the equation, what happens, or even numerical noise in the numerical integration, what happens is that you jump to the ordered state before. So imagine you start from here, the solution is disordered, you slowly decrease the noise amplitude, and you see that at one point you will jump to the ordered solution before reaching this linear instability threshold. And so you see a jump in the order parameter, meaning that the transition is first order in this case. And there's also an hysteresis, meaning that if now you start from here and increase slowly the noise, you will go until here and jump to the disordered state here. So you have an hysteresis loop.
I missed what happens with that solution that you were just following.
Yes, this one. So the red curve is when you decrease the noise,
right.
And the black curve is when you increase the noise.
Right, and that solution just...
So here...
What happens at the tip there with that?
Here, you just jump to the disordered state. And then you go on...
The branch just disappears? I mean, mathematically, how does that happen?
Yeah, there is no more bent solution. There's no... Yeah, so only the... Don't know. We don't know. This is only numerical, so we don't have a full dynamical system analysis of it.
Okay, so this was the analysis of the polar self-propelled particle case with ferromagnetic velocity alignment. I will now turn more briefly to the second case. Yes. Oh, okay.
Do you have an understanding why we see the traveling waves rather than the waves in the perpendicular direction? I mean, why are they more
Yeah, well, it depends on what you call an intuitive argument or whatever, but what we know is that here... No, of course, but the understanding we have...
Well, intuitive argument is one with your hands doing this.
Right. No, so what we know is that, of course, we observe these bends numerically. This is one argument about our understanding. The second thing is that in this region, or at least close to here, the most unstable perturbation are the longitudinal ones. So it's kind of compression instability, and you can understand from this that at the nonlinear level it will generate some waves. But
one along the order is similar to the Burgers equation in some sense. So you can also rely on this kind of waving. So there are many ways of understanding this. But you know, how would you put it?
Yeah, I think a lot of the effects come from the system where, you know, the density, which is the parameter that users can see, something from the outside is also affected by the W itself. And so, indeed, if you just look in one dimension, this causes the instability of this compression and type of phase. This helps at all. But that's why all these systems, as well as, I think, the pneumatic, the set of parallels, whatever you want to call them, that you're going to talk about next, they all have this kind of behavior instability. We just come from that, the density, which is the tuning parameter for the transition, is compacted.
So it should be added that there's nothing, that this instability doesn't depend on the particular relations between density and noise. And the parameters of the equation that Eric was talking about, any dependence of the mu of rho on rho
That's right. No, that's right. It just depends that mu depends on rho.
Okay.
And rho is a parameter that tune the transition, but it's also one of the fields in your model which is convected by that.
Exactly.
And that's
so it's essentially on
one. I'm not sure whether this qualifies as a physical explanation, by the way. I don't think so, but. That's the best
thing. Well, I would say the physical explanation is exactly the region of high density. It goes faster.
Yeah.
And so it picks up stuff in front of it, so it gets more dense, so it goes even faster.
That's a positive feedback.
Oddly enough, the same thing works if it goes slower, if the density gets higher. Because then it picks up stuff from behind. Either way, it picks up stuff.
Yeah, so there's a case where there is no such instability. Well, if the coefficient mu, the linear coefficient mu, is constant, does not depend on density. We have models also where this is
but,
the case.
John, this also happens in a model that is not polar, that is not moving on average. If the coupling, instead of being to something like a velocity, is actually to an orientation of the parameter, like in a magnetic. And it happens, I think, because even if things are not moving, you know, the density might be. So it's something similar to what. In that case, I don't quite understand
yeah.
it as well. But
yeah,
it happens, the physical
argument is less obvious there.
It's less obvious, but it happens there too for the same reason, technically, which is that the parameter that use the transition is itself. Determined by the other, as a dynamics which is determined by
and
the other.
And it's just as inevitable?
Yes.
Any, it's from another one of these things, any density depends on
my intuitive description of this is that you have a dense thematic packet.
Mm-hmm.
The denser it is, the longer it's going to be there. And so it's picking up, recruiting guys, diffusing around, and so on. There's the same thing that we have the direction.
So the denser it is, the when you say longer, then you mean the longer it will remain ordered.
Yeah. And then it picks up more people diffusing around the gas around. Everything in the gas coming into this packet will be absorbed into it.
Yeah, but it's not as obvious as the.
Yes.
The mathematics is the same.
Right, so let me move on to the case of self-propelled particles with nematic alignment rules. So this is basically illustrated on this drawing taken from this letter by Ginelli et al. So this is basically what we have previously, self-propelled particle with ferromagnetic alignment. Now we want to enforce the fact that the alignment rule should be nematic, that is, that reversing, changing the angle theta into theta plus pi should not change the interaction. So this is what happens if this incoming particle, the second particle, has a reversed angle theta, it just gets aligned in the same direction. Right, so you can apply the same approach, Boltzmann equation and so on. I expand in Fourier angular modes. Now you keep the first two modes as a relevant order parameters because you want to look for a nematic order, but also possibly for polar order, so you keep the two order parameters. The equations you get are a little bit more complicated, there are more terms, but it's done exactly in the same spirit. So here we have kept the formulation in terms of angular Fourier modes, F1 and F2, instead of going to the more standard vector and tensor notation. So you could introduce a polar vector associated to F1 and a nematic tensor associated to F2, but we think this formulation is simpler. Yeah, okay. So going to the stability, we have basically the same kind of behavior. Yes? Ah, okay. So nematic tensor is just that when you have a polar order parameter, this can be represented by a vector. And if you want to represent a nematic order parameter, which is invariant when you rotate by pi, a vector is no longer relevant and you need to use a tensor, a symmetric translation tensor. So basically, if you represent, so imagine that you introduce polarity vector n alpha, your particle, you define
tensor Q alpha beta, which is, I think, N alpha N beta minus 1/2 of delta alpha beta, I think, something like that.
Yeah.
So it just you build a tensor onto this vector and just take the symmetric traceless part of it. Right, thank you. So the stability properties are very similar to the previous case, at least if you consider the nematic order now instead of polar order. So here is a stability diagram, noise as a function of density. You have here the disordered homogeneous state. The line sigma t corresponds to the linear instability of the disordered state. Here in this colored range, you have so the homogeneous ordered state exists but is unstable with respect to long wavelength perturbation. You have here again, I think, a color code to indicate the angle of the most unstable perturbation. You get a restabilization here. So here, homogeneous order exists. And again, you have this kind of spurious secondary instability below this line sigma u that, maybe you can't see it very well. So here, it's just to illustrate what happens in terms of the growth rate. This is the real part of the largest growth rate. And you see that it is positive here. Oh, sorry. So here is the disordered state. Here, this region corresponds to this region here. And below sigma u, it becomes, it takes large values, which is again a sign that this is probably an artifact of the truncation.
Is plus
was the actions? Yeah, you have several eigenvalues in your stability problem. And this is a real part of the largest, the largest real part of the eigenvalue, the largest growth rate. Okay, so again, we look at nonlinear patterns in at least in the region where the homogeneous order is unstable, close to the transition line. And the interesting thing is that we can find analytical solution for this pattern. So it takes so the analytical solution is here. It's quite simple. It's 1/2 constant plus a hyperbolic cosine. And if you plot it, it takes this form. So this is for the order parameter here. For the density, it's essentially the same, but it is just shifted by some constant value. And given this analytical expression here, you can analytically study the linear stability of the band in the transverse direction, so along the band.
So A and B material parameters?
Yeah, so we know all the coefficients C, A, and B. Well, I just wrote it in the sum. And they depend also on system size, yes.
Solution scales.
Exactly. Yeah, I didn't put all the details to get simpler expressions, but yeah.
Basically, when this band is large, it's just two tench, two hyperbolic tension.
Exactly. So you really recover something like this with scale with system size. So if we increase system size, the band will have a larger width. And you can look, again, so at the stability in this transverse direction here. And you find that it is generically unstable at the linear level. So you have a
linear instability of this
pattern. So what happens at the nonlinear level in terms of stability is not fully clear yet. But what we know is that at least when the bands are thin enough, so in some region of parameter space, you get some chaotic regime where the bands break and reorganize in a chaotic way. Yes.
Do you have a particular wavelength related to the bands, or actually the coarsening to a single band?
So you mean at which level? In this chaotic regime here?
Right.
Yeah, well, I think so. There's a wavelength which is at least this way. But
bands.
Yes, but we have not characterized the chaos in full detail in this case, I think.
But what you're saying is that you get solutions with any wavelength that you want.
Yeah, but if you wish, but it depends on the parameter. So given the parameter sigma and rho, so density and noise, this fixes the width of it. So this fixes all the parameters here. So there's no free parameter.
So it doesn't scale with the system size.
Yes, if you increase density, you can.
Sorry.
The level of the exact solution, you can have it as large as you want.
No, no, John, I forgot that. N system size. Yeah. Density, noise, N system size.
So just by adding particles, I mean, so it's just like a liquid drop in equilibrium. If you want to make it bigger, you just add more particles.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so this is again a stability diagram with a lot of information on it, but I just wanted to show you again. So this line sigma t, which marks the stability limit of the disordered state, which is here. Here, the homogeneous disordered state, sorry, the homogeneous ordered state is unstable between sigma t and sigma s. And here, the homogeneous ordered state is stable. And what I want to show on this diagram is that are the two limits of existence of the band. So there is this line sigma max here, and this line sigma min here. And between these two lines, the band solutions exist. We have seen that they are linearly unstable, but the solution exists. And you can determine actually the width of the band or the fraction of space occupied by the bands as a function of noise here. So this is shown here for a given density, rho equals 1. So you go along this line here at rho equals 1, and you vary the noise amplitude here. And varying the noise, you see that here the band is very narrow, the fraction occupied by it is 0, and here the band is very large, it occupies almost all system size. So the chaotic region is somewhere like here, what I showed you before. Right, so in the last 5 minutes or so, I will describe what happens for fully nematic particles, so it's actually a little bit simpler. So now, instead of having self-propelled particle, polar self-propelled particle, you have nematic particles. So they cannot have fully directed motion, they necessarily just diffuse back and forth, but the diffusion of the particle is coupled to their orientation. This is what makes them non-equilibrium. And you have, again, nematic alignment rules, which are the same as in the case of self-propelled particles I showed before. So the particles can align or anti-align, let's say. No, so here I'm talking about a positional diffusion. So instead of having directed motion with polar self-propelled particles that just move forward along the heading direction, there is a symmetry theta, theta plus pi, so there is no preferred direction, well, no preferred sense. So they can just move back and forth. Otherwise, they would have a preferred
direction.
Yes, and not. No, so okay, so as before, you have also angular diffusion, as always, but I mean, you replace the self-propulsion by some positional diffusion, which is correlated with the orientation. Right, so again, you can apply the same techniques, and you end up with a bit simpler continuous equation for the density field and the nematic field. The nematic field is the only relevant order parameter here. The polar field is zero by definition. So while these equations are simpler, you have, again, only the purely local term, Landau-like. You have some diffusive term here. You have some coupling to the density through a second order differential term. Right. So again, the scenario is quite similar to what we had before. So you have again the four transition lines. Let's say, well, the four lines in this diagram. So this is the limit. This is sigma t. So this is the limit of stability of the disordered state here, homogeneous disordered state. Here below sigma s, the homogeneous ordered state is stable. Between these two lines, the homogeneous ordered state is unstable. And you have again these nonlinear patterns, these bands which appear, which can be characterized and which exists between these two lines, sigma max and sigma min. So it's essentially the same scenario as before. You can also characterize a fraction of space occupied by the band. You can have we have also a pretty similar expression, analytical expression for the band. So the detailed expression of this coefficient A, B, and C is slightly different, but it's quite similar. Here again, you can study analytically the stability of this band along the longitudinal direction of the band, or along the band. And you find that it is always unstable. And here we have characterized in more details the chaotic regime that appear. So what you observe is typically this kind of regime or this kind of regime, depending a bit on the width of the band, but it is clearly chaotic. You have a finite correlation length in your system, which is basically given by the width of the band solution. And this has important consequences because it means that the order-disorder transition is now pushed away to the limit of existence of the band. So if I come back to this diagram, where probably you can't see anything, but so a priori, one would say that the onset of order is here at the limit of stability of the disordered state. But given that the band solution is chaotic, it means that to recover the ordered state by decreasing the noise, you will go until this line, sigma min, until the band solution, which are chaotic, disappear. So this fully nonlinear analysis is quite important, because it really changes the conclusion on the order-disorder transition.
So can you, is it really, should one think of that intermediate region where you have bands but they're unstable? Should that be thought of as a different phase, or is that just a disordered phase with a complicated microstructure?
Yeah, this kind of thing. So disordered phase, macroscopic disorder, but it has a correlation length which is not purely microscopic. It's kind of mesoscopic correlation length, if you like. So it's still much larger than the typical scales of particles.
What sets the correlation length?
So it's typically the size of the band. So you see
that. What sets the size of the band? Sorry,
you
sound like a two-year-old.
But
it's not the size of the band. It's independent of system size.
Yeah, you're right.
It's a long wavelength. Actually, it comes out, some very long wavelength comes out of the linear stability analysis of the band solution. Okay, as well as the very long time scale. Very long with finite. But finite. But at the non-linear level, we have numerical evidence.
So I think that is finite length.
But which parameters of the equations determine this length scale?
That's for the linear stability of the band.
Yeah, say.
Like this, I wouldn't be able to tell you. I'm talking in memory of the details. What's that? So that you have at the linear stability level. It's nothing obvious, but we can show it to you. I mean, it's actually in the preference. Now, at the non-linear level, it goes up to some NEM scale, which is of the same order as the linear most unstable wavelength. But, so it's very large. And it's finite, it doesn't depend on system size. For every system size, you have the correlation function goes down the same as linear system size, which gives us a finite wavelength, as opposed to the width of the band solution, which scales with system size. The band solution on the scale of system size, yeah. Its linear instability is actually given by instability of the front. It's composed of two fronts, and in size limit, these two fronts are basically non-interacting.
The equations for the pneumatic, I guess because they're written in the dimensionless quantities, because almost all coefficients are like one. But
yeah.
Not all, but.
Here, all of them almost, right?
Yeah, so, well, all the length scales that appear here are related to microscopic length scale, so it's either since we have point length particles, so it's related to the interaction range, basically. So somehow it scales with the microscopic length scales, but it has a numerical prefactor which is large. Right? It's not.
So it's a conspiracy of factors of pi or something.
Yeah.
And it's really difficult to understand because it's so long of a band, so we're talking about physical intuition about it.
the main factor giving rise to the band. Now, for the band itself being unstable around itself.
I mean, can you think of it as the band having a negative surface tension?
Yeah.
Well, yes. Negative, but apparently not very negative.
Not very negative, and it's probably balanced by some water term.
I just want to suggest that the only nonlinear term is that real part of grad square F2, right? There's nothing else. Everything else is boring and does normal things.
But that's also linear.
Yeah, that's linear.
It's linear. But if you look at it, that is a second derivative of the magnitude of the order parameter, which feeds into the equation below. That nonlinearity is what gives you this negative surface tension thing, quote unquote. Would you agree, Eric? Isn't that what happens?
On the front?
Yeah, after it phase separates into a band. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you find? That if I have a second derivative of F2 over there, that basically gives me, let's say the band is along the x direction, so I have a second derivative in x of s, right?
So when you say the band is in the x direction, you mean?
The orientational order is in the x direction, the gradient is in the y direction, right? So, and you have, isn't that the direction of the instability that gives you chaos and all of that stuff?
Yeah.
You mean the directional order?
That's the only thing that you have, that feeding into, that makes it basically non-local and it feeds into the first term. Isn't that right?
Is it supposed to be obvious that that gives you a negative surface tension?
If you write it in terms of S, the magnitude of the order. I mean, I can't see it in this F2 form that we have here, but if we write it as a magnitude and director,
okay.
And in turn, the magnitude is when you will see the effective surface tension thing.
But it also depends, actually, F2 depends on the local density.
If I just call rho times S as my order parameter, is basically what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Sorry.
No, we can discuss about it in more detail. I just don't know the calculation by heart. Okay, so I think this is all for this. So let me conclude. I think it's time. So first of all, I will conclude the methodology. So we have a generic method to derive continuous equation for the radioactive matter depending on the different symmetries of the problem. It is interesting because we have non-transport coefficients, which leads to a simple phase diagram with only two parameters, the overall density and the noise amplitude. Along these lines, there are possible extensions that I did not mention in this talk. So, for instance, you can look at non-metric or topological interactions. This was motivated, for instance, by the study of birds, real birds' flocks. In the case of polar particles, you can also include some positional diffusion at the microscopic level, and this will yield additional anisotropic diffusion terms in the continuous equation. This we have now done. And there's also the question to...
Yes. In the ordered state.
Oh, I simply mean it's not a Laplacian. It's, you know, it's grad grad.
Presumably, it can only be not a Laplacian in the ordered state.
Well, okay, I simply mean that instead of having.
The thing that you mean can only happen in an orientationally ordered state. If the state is isotropic.
Yeah, right. But I was not talking about mathematical form of the term. Right?
Yeah,
nothing more.
But I'm saying the mathematical form of the term must be a Laplacian if you're in an isotropic state.
I don't think so, but we can discuss this in more detail.
But if it's not a Laplacian, then it's anisotropic.
But I mean,
the
terms in the equation are the same.
No.
Either you are above or below the threshold, right?
Transients leading to isotropic states. These transients are ruled by the same isotropic diffusion terms.
It's only one equation for all phases.
Yeah, so it might be that the isotopic term, this term is equal to zero. This, okay, but. Formally, it exists, right?
You mean you want to write a diffusion coefficient that depends on the order parameter?
No.
And so, in some sense, so you will have a...
In all your papers, you do have this.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Suppose you have the diffusion term.
That's kind of involved the order parameter.
committed as a tensor, sorry?
It's kind of involved the order problem.
Yes.
Like you have, so you're saying you can have something like Q alpha beta, D alpha, D beta.
Well, but you could write that even in a state where the mean value of the order parameter may be zero, but you could have fluctuations and so on.
I guess I'm just saying I wouldn't call that a diffusive term, it's not linear.
Fine.
Okay, let's discuss this after one. Right, so that's part of the relation to other derivations, for instance, starting from Fokker-Planck equation or Engstrom equations, that yield similar equation, but not exactly similar. There are different terms, etc., and it would be interesting to understand in more details the similarities and discrepancies between these derivations. One possible thing we plan to do is to take into account the finite distance between particles when they interact, so include this in the Boltzmann equation. Okay, so now on the generic stability properties. So we now have a kind of generic scenario, which is summarized here. So first thing is to observe that there is a homogeneous ordered state that appears below some transition line. Then second step, we see that there is a generic instability of this homogeneous ordered state close to the transition line, instability with respect to long wavelength perturbation. This instability leads to the appearance of nonlinear patterns, usually ordered bands, that are found to be stable in the polar case, and unstable and often chaotic in the case of nematic interactions. So we have a method to study the stability of these bands analytically, at least in the nematic case, but we also plan to try to apply the same method in the polar case. And this has important consequences, because this is basically the main message of the talk in terms of stability analysis, is that the order disorder transition line is not given by what you would expect, namely the limit of stability of the disordered homogeneous state, but it is given by the limit of existence or of stability of these nonlinear bands. So it's very important to study the stability of these bands. And if they are stable, it means that as soon as a band appears, you are in the ordered state, because there is some order in the system. If they are unstable, you reach the ordered state only when you leave the region of existence of this band. So, I mean, by decreasing the noise, for instance. Okay, thank you very much for your attention. Questions, John?
If you're doing a theory of an interface in a simple fluid, you could put in a pressure that depended on density in a way that would favor a high liquid density and a low vapor density.
Okay.
And then you could relate the interfacial tension, the surface tension, to parameters in that question to the pressure. And now, in everything you've done, correct me if I'm wrong, but in everything you've done, your pressure is basically just linear in rho. Is that true?
Yes. Yes.
So I'm wondering if you introduced, interactions that could give the pressure some nonlinear dependence on the density, and maybe the kind of nonlinear pressure dependence on the density that you would have in two-phase coexistence, if you could thereby make the surface tension go positive and stabilize these bands. Do you sense that? So if you just took the equations and just phenomenologically said, instead of putting in a pressure that's rho, I'll put in a pressure that's got the form it does in phase separation, could you then make the surface tension positive?
Yeah, so I don't know if we didn't try this, but the motivation to do this is not very clear.
Well, because particles have attractive interactions. It's the sort of thing that leads to the liquid vapor phase separation. I mean, the other motivation is just to see whether it's inevitable that all pneumatic droplets are unstable,
or whether
you can actually make a stable pneumatic droplet. If you could, then you could make a stable pneumatic phase. That seems like a pretty good deal.
Well, it is not after all that, even just the short-range repulsion in the systems, even without all these complications, does give you phase separations or sometimes clustering. So I think
The question is whether.
I understand, but I'm saying from the point of your motivation, so this provides motivation actually.
Yeah. The interesting thing here is that you have no traction repulsion layer, where you have this space separation, and you have this intrinsic instability of the.
Right, but what's not obvious is whether you put in interactions in a way.
Presumably, if you go towards the usual equilibrium situation, certainly the attraction, you will stabilize this. And even just repulsion will do it.
I think repulsion will do it. You don't
but then you lose order, so you know. It's,
you need yes. You need finer size of particles.
No, I also want to mention that if you stabilize the band in your own equations, if your parameters were not married to the microscopic model, that is, the activity has the same strength as the diffusion coefficient in the S in the F2 equation. If you could decouple that,
right?
One was very small compared to the other one, then the bands become stable again.
So unlike the banding instability, it's not this instability is not
it's not universal.
You can cook up models with the instability doesn't happen. We presumably need to cook up models where you can make the wavelength for the instability anything you want.
Yeah, I think Eric will know the answer to that.
So very
large. But presumably you can go right away.
Yes.
I did. Question is just, is anybody actually solving these equations? I mean, you know, I mean, there's like, you know, hundreds, whatever, a couple of hundred years of solving the Navier-Stokes equation, right? When you put boundary conditions flows, and, whatever, I mean, you know, shear flows or like common, whatever. Is anybody actually seeing if there's different effects in these things when you have like a plus-one flow or turbulence, you know, whatever? It, you know, all kinds of instabilities and things that occur when you actually start imposing boundary conditions. Something that
I've done a little bit of that weird stuff that happens.
So up to now we've solved I think only with periodic boundary conditions. Sure. But you could start putting some real boundaries, but then it's not clear what should be the boundary condition, because the usual no-slip boundary condition you have for fluids do not necessarily apply here. And even in microscopic models, there are not so many trials to include some interaction with walls, and how you should do this is not fully clear.
That's part of the interesting
but
thing, I guess.
Yeah, in principle, that could be one avenue to follow. Yeah.
Okay,
more
thank you. Okay. I like that.